from 6 on 2FM.
Well, hello there. Firstly, thank you to both Emma and Roz for keeping us entertained this afternoon, filling in for the two Johnny's Magic as always. It is Thursday, the 25th of August. I'm Shane Dawson, and you are listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, the Champions League draw for the group stage is just in. We'll have more on that in a few moments. And sticking with soccer, former Republic of Ireland goalkeeper Colin Doyle will be dialing in from Bradford to chat emerging Irish talent in Irish club football and all things goalkeepers, which I'm very much looking forward to. We'll check in with European silver medalist Ciara McGeehan, who's already back in training after her heroics in Munich. And as it is Thursday, we have an Irish eye on America as Jeff Shepherd sets us up for Saturday's College Football Classic down Lansdowne Road. We also have copies of the new Madden NFL 23 game to give away. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Yes, hello there, good evening. It is great to have your company on this Thursday evening, and we'd usually rattle through some news headlines, lots to get through in the show. However, the UEFA Champions League draw has just occurred, and I'm delighted to say that RTE soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue joins us now live from Tallaght Stadium, and we will chat Shamrock Rovers Ferencvaros very shortly. But Tony, breaking news, I suppose, in the last few moments there, the Champions League draw has occurred. Group C looking like the group of death: Munich, Barcelona, Inter Milan and Victoria Pilsen. Rangers will be travelling to Anfield. Liverpool will be going to Ibrox. Celtic will be hosting Real Madrid. Lots to look forward to in this Champions League draw, and I suppose just wrapping your head around some big ties.
It's fantastic, isn't it? It took long enough. These draws are interminable things. They try and make a production of them, but eventually we've been treated to, I think, a really exciting Champions League draw. If you go through it, Group A, Ajax, Liverpool, who are a pot two team, Napoli and Rangers, who got through dramatically last night. So as you say, yeah, imagine Rangers hosting Liverpool at Ibrox. That's one to look forward to. Where is the group of death? Well, Group B is Porto, Atletico, Bayer Leverkusen and Bruges. But Group C, six times winners Bayern Munich against five times winners Barcelona, who didn't make the knockout stage for the first time in 17 years last year. Bayern against Barcelona is always going to be big. Inter Milan and Victoria Pilsen in that group as well. And then as a Tottenham Hotspur fan, I was particularly interested. Eintracht Frankfurt were a pot one team because they won the Europa League, which was a bit shocking because, to be honest, that Europa League final wasn't anything to write home about. But they were the pot one team. Tottenham came in next, Sporting Lisbon and Marseille. So I think Tottenham fans will be eagerly looking at that one, going some good trips, some good ties, and every opportunity to get out of Group D. Then to Group E, AC Milan, Chelsea, Salzburg and Dinamo Zagreb. F, Real Madrid, the champions of course, will play Celtic. RB Leipzig and Shakhtar Donetsk in that one as well. Shakhtar, for political reasons of course, will be playing their games in Warsaw at the home of Legia Warsaw, but Celtic fans will be looking for travelling opportunities there as well, and Celtic in the Bernabeu in Madrid. That's some game to look forward to. And then what about Group G? Are we going to call this the Alpha Inga or Alpha the Haaland Derby? I'm thinking about his dad, aren't I?
Yeah, no, that's old school. That's allowed, Tony. That's allowed.
Yeah, Borussia Dortmund against Manchester City will be someone, won't it? I mean, Haaland hasn't entirely set the world on fire yet, but we can see how good he is, and I'm sure he'll be really looking forward to going back to Dortmund. So Man City, Sevilla, Borussia Dortmund and Copenhagen. And then the last group, Group H, Paris Saint-Germain, Juventus, Benfica and Maccabi from Tel Aviv. So it's a superb draw, some great games and prospects. It'll be different this year as well, of course, because they'll kind of be concertinaed in quite quickly. They have got to get through all these stages before the World Cup this year. That makes it such an unusual, such a strange season. And it makes me wonder, thinking about Paris Saint-Germain and how motivated Messi might be. Well, I have to have a feeling that his motivation this year is about Argentina and the World Cup. And I don't know whether it'll be quite there for him for Paris Saint-Germain in games against Juventus.
Well, the biggest news headline out of that, personally, Tony, is that you're a Tottenham Hotspur fan. I did not know this.
This is news to me. This is
that true?
Yeah, I genuinely, I thought you just
my,
a good
my deep and dark secret. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Jesus, that's news to me. Well, some tasty
Cork
away
City.
Days.
Yeah. Well, Cork City first and always, of course. But then Tottenham Hotspur.
Okay. Okay. No, that's listen,
yes,
that's,
indeed. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Frank.
But as I say, that surprised me with the.
Sorry, go on, Tony. I cut across you there. Frankfurt, Spurs, and Lisbon are decent.
Not at all. Yeah.
Decent away days.
Frankfurt, Tottenham, Sporting Lisbon, and Marseille. So fantastic trips, absolutely. Yeah. If anyone could get assigned to any of those games, I would love that. But if not, we might get there anyway. No, I went to see Tottenham against Liverpool in the Champions League final. A couple of years ago, and it was a pilgrimage of sort. A pity that Champions League final, the most unlikely one, I suppose, for Spurs to make it through to that, with that extraordinary semi-final win against Ajax, extraordinary games against Man City that year as well. The Pochettino Spurs, the Lucas Moura game, and that final against Liverpool was over after a dodgy handball after a couple of minutes. So, those are memories we don't always want to cherish.
Listen, let's come back to where you are, because you are in Tallaght Stadium. So Shamrock Rovers, French Farrah, Shamrock Rovers have an uphill battle, to say the least, in terms of the tie, but they'll certainly be targeting this as a 90-minute match to try and go out and put a good performance in.
Yeah, we haven't yet got the teams. They'll be announced soon enough, and we might get them to you before the end of the show. But I think it'll be interesting to see what Stephen Bradley does, because, let's be honest, this... The tie is a done deal. Ferenc Varos were too good for a rather naive Rovers in the first leg, but they knew, I guess, going into that one, that they did have group stage football assured, and it is going to be Conference League almost certainly. It would be something of a miracle if Shamrock Rovers were to overturn a 4-goal deficit. But they were missing key men in the first leg. I mean, Captain Ronan Finn, of course, who tonight will equal Gary Rogers' record for League of Ireland players' European appearances with 54, and he's bound to overtake that as well in the group stages of the Europa Conference League. The draw for that tomorrow afternoon, by the way. And remember in the first leg when Jack Byrne came on, he really asked questions of Ferenc Varos, so it'll be good to see, as he's been eased back to full fitness, if he is involved tonight. And what are the exciting young talent? Remember, there was 2 17-year-olds on the bench in Budapest for Shamrock Rovers. So will Stephen Bradley give them a taste of further education and give them an opportunity tonight? Will he stick or twist? Will he see if he can, as they did against Ludo Goretz? Their home record here in Europe has been superb. It's a full house here at Tala. We just have the security staff in at the moment, but they'll be opening the gates soon. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff. It's live on RT as well, of course, and it should be a good game. Shamrock Rovers against Ferencvaros here in Tallaght.
Gentlemen, Tony, hopefully we might check in with some team news later on, but for now, thank you for taking the call from Tallaght Stadium. So, they are the UEFA Champions League draw. That draw is in full on the RT Sport website, if you'd like to look through it again. But some big, big ties there. And as Tony mentioned, a bit of a condensed group stage, because it's going to be wrapped up by November 2nd in order to get that World Cup in, and a few other changes. There's going to be new offside technology. And of course, up to 5 subs can now be used in 3 stoppages. So more offside technology and whatnot from UEFA. What could possibly go wrong? In terms of other news headlines today, well, former England international Jo Brown is set to make her Ireland debut in Saturday's second test against Japan in Tokyo. The flanker previously won 7 caps for England, the most recent of which came in 2019, and has been able to switch international allegiance to Ireland due to World Rugby's new, somewhat controversial eligibility rules. Brown replaces Doherty Wall, who drops out due to injury, while influential second row Sam Monaghan is also unavailable. In Monaghan's absence, Hannah O'Connor will move from number 8 into the second row, while Grace Murr will pack down at the base of the scrum. The final change sees Laura Feely given a start at loosehead prop. 2 more first caps are likely to be handed out, with US-based Jess Keating and utility back Emma Tilley both named on the bench. And of course, we'll be previewing that match in detail on tomorrow evening's show, so do tune in for that one. Stoke City have sacked their manager Michael O'Neill and placed assistant Dean Holden in interim charge. The former Northern Ireland and Shamrock Rovers boss won only one and lost three of Stoke's opening five games in the Championship this season, and so currently lie 21st in the table. Brian Dowling is set to take charge of the Kilkenny senior Camogie team for four consecutive years. He's been put forward for ratification to remain in charge for the 2023 season. Dowling has overseen a successful period in Kilkenny, of course, since his appointment back in 2019. He guided the Cats to All-Ireland success in 2020 and once again earlier this month after that dramatic final against their rivals Cork. Bad news for Tipperary. Craig Morgan has suffered an ACL injury. Of course, Barry Heffernan has suffered an ACL injury as well, playing the club championship in Tipperary. So bad news for Liam Cahill planning for Tipperary's new season, which is fast approaching already. Sure, once we get the clubs out of the way, we're back into the leagues. And finally, Ireland's hockey team face into what's likely to be a pivotal game of their Euro hockey qualifiers this evening, having hammered Lithuania 19-0. Yes, 19-0 in their opener yesterday. Ireland now face the world number 11, France, who are hosting the qualifier tournament. That one is underway at 7 p.m. So you can listen with us here all the way through to 7 p.m. and then tune in to the hockey. Of course, Ireland's women's team had an unbeaten run in their qualifier, so very best luck to the men's team. Now, before we get into the nuts and bolts of the show, I have some competition news, because the start of the new NFL season is right around the corner, and for gamers and gridiron fans that also means the release of EA Sports Madden NFL 23. So if you fancy throwing a Hail Mary as Aaron Rodgers, scrambling out the pocket as Patrick Mahomes, or just winning Super Bowls as Tom Brady, well, you're in luck. To celebrate the new season, we are giving away game codes for Madden 23 to two lucky listeners. So to be in with a chance to win a game code for either the Xbox or PS5, well, all you have to do is answer the following question. Which NFC West team are the current Super Bowl champions? If you know the answer, well, text your answer, name, email address, and whether you want PS5 or Xbox, code to 51552. As always, RT competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details. So that question again, which NFC West team are the current Super Bowl champions? Text your answer, name, email address, and whether or not you want the PS5 or Xbox, codes to 51552. So lots to look forward to there. And do enter the competition. We'll be revealing the two lucky winners a little bit later on in the show. As I say, we'll be chatting to Jeff Shepherd and all things US sport. Colin Doyle will be joining us up next. We'll be chatting to Kieran McGeehan. So do stay with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Yes, well, you're very welcome back to Game On this Thursday evening. And as promised earlier in the show, I'm delighted to say that we can now welcome Kira McGeehan to join us, fresh off her heroics in Munich. Kira, how are you?
I'm not too bad, not too bad. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I'm sure it's always a bit manic trying to, I suppose, process achievements there in the moment. But have you been able to let it all sink in and reflect on Munich now as a bit of time has passed?
Yeah, I think I have. It's my Thursday and I got back on Sunday. So I've had a good few days to enjoy being back home, home as in Manchester, home with my boyfriend. So, but yeah, it's often surreal. You end up coming back from a major champ and it's difficult not flying back to Ireland to my family because that's where all the buzz is. Whereas where I live in Manchester, not too many people know who I am really. So it's kind of a bit quiet, but it's been lovely coming back to Thomas. But I'm straight back into it, back into training, because I've got a couple of races hopefully now to finish out the season. So I've been enjoying it, but I haven't had a big celebration yet. So it can feel a bit strange, but I've certainly been processing it. I'd say I maybe even came off the championships and felt a bit of a low like immediately after, because it's all such a buzz, and to go from one champ straight into the other, it's all focus, focus, focus. And then I came back and I think I crashed ever so slightly. I was chatting to my siblings about it, and my big sister's a doctor. She's like, well, you've had a complete dopamine rush and it's normal to kind of get a come down. So, but no, I'm certainly able to reflect and appreciate the summer that I've had so far.
I know you have your boyfriend Thomas over in Manchester. Now, Manchester is not too far away from Ireland, obviously. But is that hard mentally to try and park those things? Because like you're talking about getting back on the track and you're straight back into training then.
Yeah, it's a strange one, I suppose, because many people would probably view those championships as the end of a season. But for me, I have a couple more chances to maybe go out and run fast. And certainly, look, I feel like I'm like, you come to the end of a championship and you want to just finish your season and celebrate. And it'd be lovely to be able to go home and celebrate with everybody back in Ireland. And Thomas would feel the same as well. Look, we're here and I'm very lucky to have my team over in Manchester, Team New Balance at Manchester. And the guys are certainly very excited on the team, but they're still racing, I'm still racing, and they know that it's always business as usual until the end of the season. But yeah, it can be hard not to be at home with everybody there, but I'm certainly looking forward to getting back to Portaferry sometime in September and being able to celebrate properly.
Yeah, no doubt, and I'm sure Portaferry will welcome you back with open arms, and I'm sure you say many people in Manchester not recognising you, but that may be changing in the near future. Like in terms of, very casually, you know, you're saying I'm just looking forward to running fast. What's at the forefront of your mind? Like what are the aims and goals for the immediate future now specifically?
Well, I certainly feel that I'm in the shape of my life. The two championships proved that, but rather unfortunately, I haven't really had a super fast 1500 metres yet this season. Anybody who doesn't really know athletics might not fully realise that, but championship running is quite tactical, particularly in the 1500. It's probably, in my opinion, I might be slightly biased, but one of the most tactical races in athletics. So I actually haven't had a chance to really test myself at full speed over the full distance. And that's like literally foot down the whole time, where you wonder, am I going to be able to last this whole race? And I really want to do that. I want to jump on the pain train and be dragged around to a super fast time. I've had the goal of an Irish record over the 1500 metres in my sights for a long time throughout my athletic career, and I believe that I'm in the shape to do it now. I just really hope I get that opportunity. So that's the immediate goal and immediate focus, and I hope I can get it come the end of the season. If it happens, I'll be over the moon. If it doesn't, I will still celebrate a fantastic season behind me. So, you know, everything after this point's a bonus.
I love that. Jumping a pain train. As if it's just a throwaway comment.
It does, and it certainly feels like that.
You mentioned tactics, and you know, it's not just a case of you go out and see who runs, you know, fastest and that's it. There's so much preparation that goes in with yourself. You mentioned, you know, your coaching base over in Manchester with Helen and so on. There has been a couple of headlines, rightly or wrongly, of this new aggressive and even more confident Ciara Magee. Like, I know it's heavily a race-by-race basis in terms of how you prepare and how you look at your opponents and so on, but have you altered your approach recently in any way?
Yeah, I'm finding it fascinating because I actually haven't alternated anything really in the initial prep and everything that I'm doing with Helen. It's very much similar to what I've done before. My race days are the same. Training is all very similar. Obviously, under a new coach, there's a few slight differences, but I haven't changed anything hugely. And believe it or not, the tactics that I went out for in the championships weren't really the ones that were written down. Sometimes you set your stall out and you find yourself in a position that wasn't completely to plan, but I feel that I prepare myself enough that I'm able to adjust that initial plan no matter what way the race unfolds ahead of me. But I've certainly found that this aggressive nature of being out at the front to put myself in that place to be able to attack when I need to has paid off over the Commonwealth Games and the European Champs. So yeah, maybe this is a new method that I'll keep up, but I'd imagine I'll have to start switching it up a little bit because people will start to suspect what I'm going to do. And that's the beauty of 1500 metre running. You have to start playing with it, and you know, maybe I'll come out next season with something new too.
Definitely, keeping people on our toes, the media included. There has been a nice rivalry simmering with yourself and Laura Murr now. Like, what's the relationship with Laura, and how do you define that rivalry?
Oh yeah, look, I've got a rivalry with many people on the track. Every girl that I step out against, I want to beat them. But like anything in life, like I feel like it, quite often on the track, it's like all's fair in love and war, and then you step off the track and nobody understands the journey that you're on better than those girls that you've raced at that time. And I imagine it's the same for many sports people. Like, you look at the GAA at home, the biggest rivals on the pitch, and then like those guys are great friends off the pitch too. I know my dad has some stories from his days playing for Down in Ulster, and particularly when they were playing Down against some of the some of the clubs in County Down and then some of the clubs up in Antrim. There was very strong rivalries and no love lost, but they're great friends now. They meet in the bars after matches and they have a fantastic time reminiscing. And, you know, I feel the same on the track. I'm very fortunate to be able to race Laura. She's certainly a fantastic 1500 metre runner at 800 and 5K. And she's really kind of setting the stall out for 1500 metre running in Europe. And I've enjoyed racing her and also enjoyed watching her. I support her whenever she's out racing. I love to see her win her global medals. And I certainly want to get out there and beat her on the track. But yeah, it's nice to have a friendship with your competitors. Some people might think that might stop you from being fiercely competitive out there. But I think I could prove that whenever I get out and race the championships, that there's no love lost whenever you're on the track. But yeah, I feel very lucky. I think whenever I come away from my athletic career, I want to be able to say I'm friends with these girls and to have built good friendships along the way. And Laura's great. I've met her for years now on the circuit. It's hard not to become friends with somebody whenever you are sitting in a hotel on your own somewhere random across Europe. And there's not too many people in particular. There's not many other Irish athletes on the circuit. So I'm very lucky that the British girls are always very friendly, in particular Laura and her teammate Gemma. They usually take me in and let me sit with them at the table. And she's been on camps in similar places to me. We were in the same camp in St Moritz this summer and we met up for dinner and some coffees. So yeah, it's a good friendship, but a strong rivalry. And we cross the line and I'm always happy to congratulate Laura. And to be perfectly honest, I think she's always delighted to see me. Obviously, she's maybe delighted to see me coming after. She might not be so delighted if I beat her. But genuinely, I feel like she has a genuine happiness for me as well whenever she sees me up there medal.
Listen, it's been well documented that you've had many obstacles and injuries. We've all had COVID delays. How mentally challenging has the past while been, particularly in the lead up to the Olympics? Like, how did you overcome that internally in your head?
Yeah, I think that's maybe one reason why I felt after these championships that I came back to Manchester and kind of had a feeling that I didn't quite, I was like, goodness, I'm feeling a wee bit low. It was unusual. I was like, I should feel really super happy and buzzing, but I kind of felt a difficulty in concentrating and I'm kind of felt like a little bit moody and my poor boyfriend had to put up with it. But I think it was because I finally was able to reflect on the year that's passed with a calf tear. The week leading into the Olympic Games was absolutely crushing. But my focus was on the race at hand. And then immediately post-injury and post-Olympics, it was on rehab. I never took a holiday. I'm only realising that now that I'm finishing this season and myself and my boyfriend still had the voucher for a $500 off an Airbnb that every athlete in the village was given. And we had planned on using that for a little break post-Olympics, but I didn't get the chance because I went and started my rehab and didn't really stop. And went straight into cross-country season. I had injuries going into that, needed an injection in my knee kind of leading into the Eurocross. Then I managed to tear my other calf in January, which wasn't great. I needed an injection in my ankle after a camp and then I got COVID. So it was, on reflection, I was like, goodness, that actually was a lot. And in that process as well, my coach changed. I changed from Steve to Helen. So that year had an awful lot of things that really I could have viewed as a stumbling block. And in any normal year, you would consider them something then a perfect reason for performances to not go to plan. So I feel very fortunate that the year continued on in a forward tangent and that an upward tangent and that I got what I wanted out of this season. But yeah, it has been tough and it's probably a reason why I've now just reflecting back being like, okay, fair play. That was a tough journey. It wasn't the smoothest path to these two medals. And even just that's the past year, never mind the reflection on my previous years behind that, my whole athletic career, I've been rather unfortunate with injuries. But I think it really makes me the person I am. It builds up that resilience and it's probably one of the reasons why I shrugged off so many of the little stumbling blocks along this season, because I knew that I was in shape and I was in the position to go out and give my all, and that's all I ever try to do. It's probably sounds like a bit of a cliche, but my mummy always said when I was heading out for exams, all you can do is your best. And every time I step foot in the track, that's what I think. And you know, your best might be whatever it is on that given day, but if I can walk away without any regrets with regards to the effort that I've put in, of course I could be frustrated with the circumstance, for example, tearing a calf the week ahead of an Olympic Games. That was something that will probably haunt me for the rest of my life, to be honest with you. It's those little things you have to deal with. But yeah, it's not been the smoothest path, but it's lovely to be able to look at two silver medals and have a real sense of achievement for not only being able to do that, but to be able to come through those rocky times.
Yeah, no, and I think from everyone looking from the outside in as well, it's lovely to see you achieving those accolades, and like, I'm sure you must appreciate it even more given the circumstances you have to come through and how mentally taxing it has been. But, you know, speaking of people looking from the outside in, I'm sure there are many young girls and young boys at home now looking up to the current crop of Irish athletes. How conscious are you of inspiring a new generation of runners?
Yeah, do you know, it's something that that I've probably been quite aware of throughout the years. Just whenever you go to Irish Champs and there's little kids asking for your autograph, and the lovely messages that I get through, I get lovely letters that are just sent to Ciara McGeehan, the runner, Portaferry, County Down, and fair play to the postal services, they get to me. I don't know how, but between Ampost and Royal Mail, they find their way to Portaferry, and it's absolutely wonderful. And it's something that I take great pride in. I think it's a lovely position to be in, and something that I take very seriously. To be a role model for youngsters, it's an honour. And to be able to be up there and, you know, perform at my best and inspire them. And I had a lovely message from a previous sports physiologist in the Irish Institute, Caroline, that her little girl saw me racing, and like, she didn't pick up on my athletic performance at all, but she said, "Mummy, she has the same plait in her hair that you put in for my cross-country races." And, you know, you just don't know what a little kid at home picks up on. It might be that you look similar to her, that she's a girl. The young lads just might be like, "Oh my goodness, she's running for Ireland, and she's like me, and I can be on that stage, and I can achieve my best ambitions and goals." And it's something that I think's truly beautiful to be able to do. I hope that I can continue doing it and continue being a role model and no more for the very young people coming up, but also the team that I was on. I was conscious that I was one of the older members of the team at the European Champs. And we have young athletes coming through who are only 19, 20, 21, who are debuting at the first senior championships. And I have to say, I'm in awe of them. They've run absolutely fantastic themselves. So it's kind of a little bit of pressure on my shoulders. I'm like, okay, I want to get out there and medal and show them that we can do it. You know, those major medals can come home to Ireland and be an inspiration for them too, and, you know, something for them to aspire to. And I think the future of Irish athletics is very bright with the crop of athletes coming through and all the youngsters that I see chomping at the bit, wanting to get out and run, whether they're running or they're playing whatever sport they want to play, be it camogie, football, rugby, or if it's even like a musical instrument or their interest is in academics. You know, whatever child looks up to me, I hope that I inspire them to try their best and get out there and give it their all.
Absolutely. Ciara, very elegantly put there. Yeah, no, definitely. Well, listen, I wish you all the very best of luck going forward, and hopefully there's many more medals to come, and you'll be keeping it on post on their toes as well, looking to deliver Ciara McGeehan the runner.
Yes, I have to take my hat off to them. They do it every time. It's very impressive.
Well, Ciara McGeehan, thank you very much for joining us this evening, and as I say, very best of luck going forward.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on.
Game on.
Football.
Now, still lots to come on this evening's Game On. But before we turn our attention to Association football, some Gaelic football news reaching us in the last few moments, and that is Shane Walsh's transfer to Kilmacud Crokes has been confirmed, and the Galway star has been cleared to play for them in the Dublin Championship. It is understood that his home club, Kilcare and Clonburne, did not lodge an objection to the controversial transfer, but the North Galway club have voiced their unhappiness over rural clubs battling to hold on to their players. A Croke Park spokesman confirmed that the transfer had been cleared by the association's Central Competitions Control Committee, the CCCC. The 29-year-old set to win his first All-Star this year after crowning a superb season by kicking 9 points in the All-Ireland final loss to Kerry, has stated the move will help prolong his career. So, some Gaelic football news there. I suppose it was expected that that transfer was going to go through there. So, very best luck to Shane Walsh. But turning our attention to football, I'm delighted to say that Colin Doyle joins us now, a former Republic of Ireland goalkeeper, now player coach with Bradford City. Colin, thank you very much for taking the call. Before we chat football, I'm going to have to reveal the secrets of radio to our listeners, because my producer has sent a note to me to say that you were mentioning you hope your dog stays quiet while you're on the phone to us here. So I have to ask, first and foremost, what dog is it?
No, I've got two puggles, so
okay.
I've just shoved them inside there now, so hopefully it won't be too bad.
No, that's great. This was forewarning. Listen, bring them into conversation, yeah, if you wish. Listen, I suppose concentrating on the sporting side of things away from animals, as I mentioned there, your player coach with Bradford, who Mark Hughes is of course managing, you're back to a club where you made your most career appearances. So I suppose how did the move come about and how's it gone so far?
Yeah, it's been good. It was a strange one, really. I was up in Kilmarnock last year. I was in Scotland for the last 4 years. I did the same role, sorry, last year, Kilmarnock player coach, player goalie coach. So we ended up winning the league. We ended up having a new manager come in halfway through, and he sort of wanted to bring his own coaching end of season, which I sort of had a feeling he might do. So I was sort of away, and I went to the last game at Bradford City, down Valley Parade, and I seen a chief exec at the time sort of mentioned that I'm away, and sort of by chance really I went back as on stage, you know, like when they bring back former guests and just to present on stage and do talks and that. So I did that, and it was by chance spoke to the chief exec and sort of told him I was away, and he said, oh, we could be looking for a goalie coach. So sort of went from there really, a few text messages when I met Mark Hughes and sort of the deal out, and here I am. So no, I'm loving it. It's good. It's Mark Hughes and Glenn Hodges, his assistant, have been top notch with me. So we've had an okay start. So hopefully we can push on. And obviously our aim is to get out of this league.
What's it like working with Sparky?
Yeah, it's good. Obviously been a Man U fan as well, which is good. It's, if I said when I was younger, I've worked with Mark Hughes, Steve Bruce at Birmingham, and Roy Keane at Ireland. We would have been laughing. So no, he's been good. He's very well into the details of who we're playing, watching videos and the best formation to play against teams. So no, he's been top class with me. So hopefully continue. But we know our aim is to get out of this league, and it's a difficult league to get out of, but it's one we're up for.
You're only 37, so still a few years left as a goalkeeper, if you wish. And I know you're in this hybrid role of kind of the player coach, but is that the plan now, to perhaps a couple of years player coach, see how this season goes? Hopefully it goes well with Bradford, of course, and then eventually make a full transition into coaching? Or perhaps might management be at some stage catching your eye?
I don't know. Look, obviously, as you said, I'm 37. As long as the body lets me, I'll continue sort of playing, but last year I was sort of third choice doing the goalie sort of coaching role, which obviously didn't get used a lot, so I was able to do a bit more coaching than goalkeeping, whereas this year I'm a number two, so I sort of have to be ready just in case Harry Lewis or goalie goes down. So I'll be definitely one that I'm looking to go into after I finish, whether it's another year or two playing wise. But I've done my outfield badges, I've done my B and my B licence and my A licence with the FAI, and I'm currently doing my goalkeeping A licence with the Scottish FA. I started it while I was up in Scotland, so I'm getting my licence, so look, just see how it pans out really. I wouldn't say no to management, but I know management's a stressful job, so we'll see how it goes. But at the moment I'm just enjoying doing what I'm doing and see where it goes from there really.
Yeah, certainly a stressful job, and you know, it involves a lot of moving around, and I know in your career you've moved around a bit. Like, I mean, is it fair to say Bradford is where you most enjoyed your football, or like even now, are you and your wife and kids and the couple of dogs of course as well settled in Bradford? Is that where you'd like to stay?
Yeah, I think it is. I moved to Bradford City from Birmingham a lot of time. Was mainly number two for a majority of my career there. I made over 100 appearances, but then moved to Bradford, and we decided to move to family over just outside Bradford. So we ended up buying a house, then we ended up leaving, going up to Scotland for 3-4 years, but we made the decision to come back last year, and then it was only when I come back down the manager phoned me at Kilmarnock and said, I want to come up and do a player coach role. But it was too good to turn down, because I knew I was going into that. I want to get into goalie coaching. So those opportunities don't come along very often. And to be honest, looking now, it's the correct decision, because if I didn't do that, I probably wouldn't be at Bradford doing the job that I'm doing today. So it was a correct decision all around, really.
Yeah, it's interesting how these things pan out. You mentioned you were third choice and you're now second choice, coupled with the coaching role. Looking, I know you haven't retired from the playing side of things yet, but in terms of when you're coaching and perhaps you're reflecting a bit more now on your career as you progress, has it been frustrating in terms of not nailing down regular first choice football at a particular club, and how mentally taxing or how mentally tough was that to deal with and the process while you were playing?
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, look, everyone wants to play as many football games as you can, but I was at Birmingham a long time. I didn't move probably from Birmingham for family reasons, just because my kids, my little boy wasn't well at the time, so for family reasons I didn't sort of move around to different clubs.
Okay.
I got when I did move, I started playing more regularly, went to Blackpool, played a season there, went to Bradford, played two seasons there, and I started really enjoying it. Then I went up to Hearts and stopped best again. But look, I had fantastic goalies in front of me. We had Mike Taylor, got 94 caps for Northern Ireland. I had Joe Hart, Ben Foster, Jack Boland, and we had Darren Randolph. So it's not like they're not bad goalkeepers in front of me. So yeah, it is frustrating that you've got these top class keepers in front of you and you're not playing week in, week out. But it's part and parcel. There's only one shirt who can play on the game in an 11-a-side match. So yeah, it is what it is. But look, looking back, I've got no qualms about my career, and hopefully between now and the end of my career I might play a couple of more games, so I'll just wait and see.
Yeah, it's always interesting, I suppose, diving into the mindset of a goalkeeper. It's such an interesting position. And I know Sky Sports have coined the phrase, nobody wants to grow up and be a right back, nobody wants to be a Gary Neville. But growing up, you know, I even remember kind of just playing in the local park, I always wanted to be in goal. And everyone then is like, why do you want to be in goal? Like, why would you want to do that? Would you not want to be out scoring goals? So for someone who has made a professional career out of it, for someone who has represented their country in goal, what attracted you to the position?
I don't know. To be honest, I just loved it. I used to get my two older brothers. They used to go out. I used to just get them play a shot. I don't know whether it was right. You go and goal. You're the youngest one of them ones. But no, I just loved it. I was obviously being a Man U fan. I used to idolise Peter Schmeichel. So I used to have the jerseys, the gloves for Christmas, and all that. So yeah, it was just that, and then my local team, Douglas Hall, at the time, I went up and sort of went in goal at under 8. I started off, and they had one look at me and says, "You're too tall. You don't need to be. You get out the pitch." So it shut me out for a bit. But no, I always sort of played in goal. But as I was saying that, been tall, they ended up putting me. I ended up playing for two teams, so I played for the older age as well. So I was sort of playing in goal for one team and outfield for the other. So it's done me in good stead. So. No, it's a tough position, and it's a lonely position, because if you make an error, it's most likely be a goal and everyone's looking at you. So mentally I think you have to be quite strong, and with social media out there now, it's a dangerous game, isn't it? So yeah, for all these sort of kids coming through, it's definitely changed from when I started to the lads starting now. It's a bit different.
Do you have any tricks mentally to stay switched on, I suppose, both when you're playing or even when you're sitting on the bench to stay tuned in? Because I bizarrely remember a very random interview many years ago with former Reading goalkeeper Marcus Hanneman, I think it was.
Yeah.
He played drums, and he used to play out beats apparently in his head when he felt his mind start to wander, and that somehow brought him back into concentrating the game. Did you have any quirky tactics to try and keep your head to keep switched on?
No, not really, to be honest, if I'm honest. I think going into games, if you've got a big game, say, I don't know, Premier League, or where playing the playoff final, playing for country or whatever, I used to just tell myself, you know, because obviously you can be nervous going into games, I used to just tell myself, it's a normal game, goals are the same size, ball's the same, grass is green, but end up, so... That's all I used to sort of say to myself. Obviously, everyone's nervous and things can happen, but look, I didn't have a sort of technique to keep my switches switched on. You sort of done that normally during the game anyway. So, yeah, it was mainly sort of just telling myself it's just a game and try and enjoy it as best as you can, really.
You mentioned Douglas there. I'm right in saying you went to the same school as Adam Eda, and
yeah.
I would have assumed you played a bit of ga, a bit of hurling growing up.
Yeah, a bit of ga, a bit of hurling. Played for Douglas as well. So now I enjoyed it. Played with the school, Douglas Comp. So yeah, I don't know Adam, but I know he's been in the school and he's obviously done well. He just come. He's back from injury. I think he played the other night and got a goal. So it's good to see him back. Yeah, so I think there's been a few sporting people come out with Douglas Comp, so not a bad school.
Yeah, no, long may it continue.
So hopefully it continues. But no, Adam's a good lad. He seems to be grounded and he's done well at Norwich so far. It's good to see him back again in the score sheet. So.
Looking at, listen, there's so much young talent coming through internationally, which is great to see. But focusing on the current crop of Irish goalkeepers, Quiveen, Gavin and Mark Travers and all, I suppose.
Yeah.
It might be difficult for you to answer completely impartially because I think I'm right in saying Quiveen's brother is on Bradford's books.
He's just, to be honest, I suppose he's just left probably a couple of weeks ago. He's gone on loan to Solly Hull. So,
Okay, well, he won't be able then to pick you up when I ask my next question of where do you rank the young emerging goalkeepers in terms of who might you see as first choice for Stephen Kenny?
I can be honest now. So, no, look, I think it's safe to say I don't think Ireland be scrambling around for goalkeepers for the next 10, 15 years, to be honest, because, well, it's Quiveen, 23, Travers, I think, 22, 23, Bazunu's 20, so and look, they're all in the Premier League, which, and they're playing obviously. Kelleher's number two at Liverpool. I think he's injured. I think he's on his way back from an injury. But Travers is playing, Bazunu's playing. I think he got Southampton for 20 million, something like that. So it's great for them. So, and that's been great for them. It can only be great for Ireland. So I don't think the goalies will be worrying position for the next 10-15 years, like I said.
Well, speaking of which, one for the future that has recently signed with you guys from Wolves, 19-year-old Joe O'Shaughnessy, who is 6'6". So is this a name we'll be hearing a lot more of in the years to come?
Yeah, Big Joe. We brought Big Joe on the loan last week because me been coaching as well, and we've got Harry and we've only got a young lad, so if me and Harry, one of us, go down, we'd probably be a bit short. So we brought Joe in until January. He's had a week's training with us. He's done quite well, to be honest. And yeah, he's a big lad. First day I met him, we done the handshake and the photographer stuff for the media, and it was the first time I sort of had to have a little glance up at. So
not something you're used to.
I'm normally looking down at people. So. He's done well the first week he's been here, so look, we'll see how it goes. He's, as you say, he's a big lad. He fills the goal. He's a decent kicker. He's a good shot stopper. So I think he's been involved with the 21s before, so hopefully if he does all right, we'll try and get him back involved. So it's good competition to have in the club. Absolutely. Going forward.
Absolutely. Well, it does seem very positive, and on that positive note, I suppose we will end our conversation there. Colin Doyle, I wish you the very best of luck going forward in the hybrid role, player coach with Bradford City. Colin, listen, really great chat, and I'm sure we'll catch up as the season progresses. Great to hear from Colin Doyle there on all things goalkeeping, which is always great to hear, as I say, unbiased, of course. Lots more to come. We're going to be checking in with Jeff Shepherd because he has got his eye on America, so do stay with us.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now, American football is returning to Dublin because Nebraska and Northwestern are meeting at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday to kick off the American college football season. I've seen a few billboards and the likes for this event. So, Jeff Shepherd, firstly, can you tell us what fans should expect? Because, you know, this isn't just a jolly up.
No, I mean, this is the real deal, Shane. So, you know, this is the start of the season. Look, I don't think you're going to expect this. Obviously, you won't see like mid-season or postseason form. I mean, it is week one. You know, look, when we talked about this game kind of getting announced a couple months back, we discussed the head coach at Northwestern. His name is Patrick Fitzgerald. And, you know, it just, I mean, it just sounds like it fits, doesn't it? And it certainly does. He has got family. Half of his Irish roots are in Nerney in County Kildare, and the other half of his family is from in the area near the River Shannon. So he goes way back on both sides of his family. So he's very excited to be, you know, to be playing in Ireland. It was interesting. I was reading an article about it, and he and his wife came over to Ireland earlier this year, and they went to the Epic Museum in Dublin, and they got their genealogy traced back. And he's actually been able to meet some of his cousins and aunts and uncles and things like that. And they're going to be with him at the game on Saturday. So just to, you know, look, if you're, it's, you know, I'm sure there's not a lot of rooting interest for Nebraska or Northwestern in Ireland, but I think that would, you know, give folks a big reason maybe to try to pull for the Wildcats this week. You've got, you know, a son of Ireland back home coaching the Wildcats.
Okay, go Wildcats. There, that's who. So I'm all in. I'm all over this. I'm all over it. Northwestern Wildcats. I'm all in. Who's going to win? So, like, are we favourites? Well, I say we. You know, well, we the Wildcats favourites?
That's we the Wildcats, right? Exactly. I love it. Just right on the bandwagon. I think it's fantastic. Go with it. Look, you know, both teams went 3-9 last season. I mean, Nebraska lost, I think, 5 games by like less than a touchdown. I mean, they were in almost every game and just couldn't get over the hump. Their coach is a former Nebraska player. Actually, Fitzgerald is a former Northwestern player. So, I mean, both of these guys have roots at these schools. I think it's going to be a tight game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I mean, Nebraska is going to want to run the football. That's what they were traditionally have been known for. I think if you're looking at it, I think Nebraska probably wins a close one. You know, I wouldn't go bet the farm on it, though.
Okay. Well, as Dave Hannigan elegantly put notes in the Irish Times, if the litany of corporate sponsors involved in this shindig wanted to give Irish sports fans a taste of the authentic college football experience and all its exploitive, chew these young men up and spit most of them out glory, they have chosen wisely. So if anyone wants to read more on that, it's in the Irish Times. But Wildcats, go Wildcats against Nebraska. So we'll be interested to see how that goes on Saturday. Shep, there is another Irish-American link in American football because Dublin-born kicker James McCourt has been snapped up by the Jacksonville Jaguars after his services were waived by the Los Angeles Chargers on Monday. McCourt, who moved with his family to Florida at the age of 8, now has the opportunity to capitalize on being the sole player in his position on the Jaguars roster after Ryan Santoso was cut by the AFC South outfit. Can you put some context into this story? I mean, is this a young rookie getting a move that probably hasn't raised any eyebrows over there, but we're all getting a bit giddy over here because of the Irish connection?
Sure. And look, we talked about this guy again last year when he was going into his senior year, and there were talks about him being one of the better kickers in college football. Look, he made 37 of 52 field goals, 18 of 23 last season, you know, in his senior year. And look, he's the only kicker on the roster now for the Jaguars. So, I mean, unless something happens, you know, between now and the start of the season, he's going to have the job. And so, yes, I mean, I think it's great. I mean, we've seen, you know, players from like American Samoa, and we've seen some Australian players make it in. Every once in a while, you might see a player who is like, you know, born in Germany or something like that, that makes it into the NFL. It's been a minute since we've had, you know, an Irish player, I believe, in the league. I know it's happened before, but yeah, I mean, I think that's just another great added bonus, you know, for American football fans in Ireland, which I know every year there's more and more of them. I mean, fantasy football's taken off over in the country. And so I think it's just another reason, you know, to stay up a little late on Sunday nights watching football. I think it's a fantastic, fantastic thing.
So Jaguars for the Super Bowl.
No. Sorry,
you're spitting out your drink there. That shows how ludicrous my question is.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night tonight and have a good chuckle about that one, Shane.
Well, listen, he's the man in charge is a Doug Pederson, a man who's both won Super Bowl as a player and a coach, you know, a man that knows how to win things. He's in that environment.
He does. It would be the biggest turnaround in the history of American professional sports if the Jaguars would go to the Super Bowl this year. Okay. And hey, you know what? Maybe one day we'll be able to say you heard it here first. I hope Ronan is recording this so we can play it back for posterity.
Absolutely. Listen, go Jaguars, go Wildcats. Like, you know, we've made it. We've made it. Listen, Jeff Shepherd, pleasure as always. Really appreciate you taking the call and putting some context into my inane American football ramblings. Thank you very much. A little bit earlier on, speaking of American football, we gave you the opportunity to win a copy of Madden 23. And I asked the question, which NFC West team are the current Super Bowl champions? And the answer, of course, is the LA Rams. So a massive congratulations to both Jack McCarthy and Courtney O'Donnell, because the legendary Madden 23 is on its way to you both. Sinead, that's all we have time for on this evening's Game On. A big thank you to listening, and a big thank you to Colin Doyle, Kieran McGeehan, and indeed Jeff Shepherd for tuning in this evening. Tara Kumar is up next, so do stay tuned to 2FM. We'll be back tomorrow evening. We'll be previewing League of Ireland FAI Cup, the Premier League, Ireland-Japan in the rugby, and we'll be chatting golf as well. So lots to look forward to. But a big thank you to Laura Lee Davis, our BCO, and Ronan Lawler, our producer. From all of the Game On team, well, it's bye for now.